The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart Family Cards. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or whether you should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart. And then share the meals in the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
You've got mail.
Hi, I'm Millie Tamaras.
And I'm Elise Morales.
And this is
Go Touch Grass,
the podcast where we log in
so you can log off.
Elise and I are two chronically online comedians, and on this pod, we break down the week in internet discourse, viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so that you can literally do anything else with your time.
Literally anything else. And if you like what you hear today and you want to hear more, we've got a Go Touch Grass Patreon already up and running with tons more content weekly, access to our Discord community, and our spinoff series Search History, where we go back and break down a viral discourse from the past. The Slender Man Patreon that we mentioned last episode is available. You can buy it for,
yes,
I think it ultimately comes out to $5 with fees that have nothing to do with Millie and I. We charge $3.50.
We're getting less than that because Patreon be taking money. So
so you can buy the Slender Man search history now, and we'll probably have another one coming. I think we're supposed to do a voted on one next.
Yes, so. I'm thinking we pick makeup makeup influencers.
Ooh.
Like, I'm going to do a poll based on makeup influencers. We'll do a deep dive into Jeffree Star or Michaela or Michelle Phan. What happened to her?
You know what? Maybe you'll be answering that question next week on the Patreon. And if you subscribe at the $10 level, you'll be able to vote. You'll be able to help. You will be able to help Millie choose which makeup influencer she wants to talk about. And that's on our Patreon.
And don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review. We love your reviews and we need more of them. But really, as always, like we say every week, the best review you can give us is to tell your friends about us. Tag us in a story. We'll repost it. You know, we're always online.
We're always there.
We're doing it. We're here.
You know, we're always logged in. Right now, for example, I am logged in from Austin, Texas. So we are virtually recording this week. We have no guest this week. It's just the girls and our internet connections.
But that means that we can go deep into all the topics that we're going to talk
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. It means that we have a little more time to gab.
Yeah, so we have quite a few. We got a lot on the docket today.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
The docket, yeah. So first, we'll just get into the discourse because this is a really meaty, heavy, plentiful, bountiful discourse. And the discourse is about Jenkins Resilience Crew.
Okay.
Have you heard of Jenkins? And if you don't know, Jenkins Resilience Crew is a TikTok account where it's about this mom, a mommy blogger, and she has about 65,000 TikTok followers as of today.
I thought you were going to say kids. I was like, oh my God.
No. She has six kids and her husband, and they live in a one bedroom apartment, and she has one on the way.
Okay.
So have you heard of Resilient Jenkins?
Just the tiniest bit, literally, like you told me you were going to do this discourse today. I had only just heard of them maybe last night. I was in a like TikTok hole, just like scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And I saw someone talking about the family of six that lives in a one bedroom apartment. And I was like, that's interesting, but I wasn't. I was in a different type of scroll space, so I didn't investigate further. So then when you said this was discourse, I was like, amazing. Now I will learn about this thing that I did see briefly mentioned.
Yeah, so, I mean, the internet's blown up over this family. So Stephanie Jenkins is a, she's trying to be a content creator, mommy blogger, and again, using her kids for content. It's a lot of like, you know, how to make meals for a family of six on a budget. Like, that's kind of a, the content was that for a while, and then it kind of switched. But again, so the mom, Stephanie, is a stay-at-home mom.
Okay.
And she had two kids. She had two daughters from another relationship, and she started dating this guy whose last name is Jenkins, and he had a son.
Okay.
So then that's three. Jenkins and Stephanie had a child. Now that child is a toddler. That's four. Then they had they have an infant. That's five. Okay. Or no, wait. Three.
I've already like my eyes are rolling back in my head. I'm like, this is way too many Jenkinses for me to keep track of.
Yeah, I think it's three kids. I'm going to actually like, now I want to research because I think it's fucking, I think it's three kids. Jesus Christ, Millie. There's so much to fucking
no, keep I know. Track of.
Okay, I'm right. Okay. So two girls, one boy from separate relationships, one kid together, another kid together. That's an infant. And then she's pregnant. She's very pregnant. She's like 8 months pregnant.
Okay.
And she's a stay-at-home mom. And the dad is a gig worker. Like he works, he says he does Uber Eats.
Oh, okay.
That is their background. Let's get to the video in question that has 8.7 million views. And I'm
As you can read in the caption above, we're a family of six going on seven living in a one-bedroom apartment. As the kids grow older, that means we constantly have to adapt our environment to give them more means for privacy and extra space. When outside our environment appears cluttered, disorganized, what have you. But quite frankly, after making do for nearly 3 years now, I have nothing but a grateful spirit for the roof over our head. Generally, the instant judgment me and my husband receive, why have so many kids if you don't have enough space for them? My perception is judgment comes from a place of not having the experience. When you've experienced enough, you generally don't judge people. I can tell you after everything I've been through in the past 3 years, there's very little I have to judge people. I would be lying if I said there wasn't a point in my life that I was so naive that I might have judged a poor person based off their appearance. And like I said, I have learned a lot. I generally look like I'm roughing it, but that's because our kids come first. I do everything I can to keep our environment clean and tidy. When it comes down to it, I could shove everything my kids have in one bedroom of some of these houses I see, and it would really look like nothing. We try to teach our kids to take care of what they have, be grateful for what we have, and keep praying and pushing for the growth that we want. Appreciate y'all watching. See you in the next video.
Okay,
Elise. So what did we just watch? What stood out to you?
Okay, well, so the visuals are basically just her cleaning this one bedroom apartment, and like it shows her, you know, like them moving tables in and out, breaking things down, putting things away. I guess the shuffle that has to exist to like have that family in that space. I find myself torn. Like I am like, I mean, I don't want to sit here and say like, there's no way you could provide a good life for your family of six in the one bedroom apartment. But it is, I don't understand why you would want to have a family of six in a one bedroom apartment. Like it can't be comfortable. It can't be comfortable. But I'm also like, I don't know. I guess technically you can do whatever you want. I'm finding myself torn. I'm finding myself truly torn between the push and pull of like people can live in unorthodox ways and also six kids in a one bedroom apartment where you're constantly moving and shuffling and cleaning and moving everything around and taking the beds and putting them down sounds extremely stressful to me. And like it maybe wouldn't be fun to live like that as a child.
Well, Elise, everything you said is what the internet has been blowing up about, okay? People have been very critical of, obviously, the parents, you know, all this stuff. But I think one of the main sticking points is that the parents are in the bedroom and the kids are in the living room. And the kids don't have beds. Like, one of them has beds, but the other ones are, like, on mattresses. There's
yeah, it looks like little futons or something.
Yes, yes. So people were really uncomfortable with that. People don't like the kids in the living room. They said if an intruder comes, she says that, you know, the kids sleep on the floor on futons and on pads and foam pads because the kids, quote, broke their beds. So they took them away. But I don't know.
Okay. I don't love that. Don't love that.
They've shown video of them from their room and their room. They have their own bed. The dad has a PS5 with a really nice TV, and they got the LED lights surrounding the TV that are like multicolored. So people are pretty fucking pissed about that.
For me, parents being in the bedroom doesn't bother me as much because I think adults have like higher privacy needs than like children have. But I do think it's messed up for the kids not to have beds. Like, we should have, like, a seat. We should have, like, bunk beds or, like, loft beds. Or they should have beds in the living room.
Yeah, people are saying it's, like, a safety concern for the kids to be in the living room because they can just walk out or they can rummage the kitchen. Or there's a lot of stuff that is, like, not safe for the children. But I could see both sides, like, why you want the parents to have a room and then why you want the kids to be in the room. I don't know. Another thing is that they do have two cats.
That's insane. That's actually so much more just like weird to me that like you would even also have animals going on in here. And litter box animals, like animals that need a litter box is like, you know, I have a cat. I love my cat. But it's like if we're going to have six kids, two cats, two adults, litter boxes, that's very stinky to me. Like I smell crazy in there.
Yeah, so we'll get back to the cat, but again, back to the PS5. A lot of people are like, it's fucked up that this guy has a PS5, but no beds. He should pawn his PS5. This is why it's so, I think, such a big topic on the internet because, you know, it does get into this touchy territory about like eugenics and shit of like who can have kids and who can't.
Right.
But also, like, it does get into another conversation of like, are poor people allowed to have nice things? Like, should he be allowed to have a PS5 if his children are living in what some may say squalor? And why can't he? And all this stuff.
Yeah, I feel like he can definitely have a PS5. Like, again, the parents' bedroom doesn't bother me particularly, but I do think the kids should have beds.
Yeah.
Like, they should have for real beds before the PS5. But then I do think he can have a PS5.
People have suspected, is she a rage baiter? Is she getting content via rage? Because she has posted multiple videos of her pregnant self changing kitty litter, which is a huge no-no. Because pregnant, and, you know, I looked this up, pregnant people should avoid changing kitty litter if possible because of the risk of toxoplasmosis, a parasitic infection that cats can carry. Cats usually get toxoplasmosis from eating rodents, birds, or other small animals outdoors. The parasite is shed in the cat's feces and can contaminate litter. The parasites become infectious 1 to 5 days after being excreted and can remain infectious in litter for up to 18 months. It affects the fetus because they can pass it to the baby's developing brain, which can cause serious problems like premature birth, poor growth, and brain and eye damage. Another thing, too, about the cats is that in older videos, it has found that she was complaining about the cats having fleas, the cats having a rash, and I don't think they have enough money to treat it.
Yeah, no.
She said something about her children having lice over and over again. I don't know that it's been going on for months. So people were like red flag for that. But whether or not she's a rage baiter is one thing.
Yeah.
But something that is very, very, very clear is that she wants to be a mommy blogger.
Yeah.
She is really leaning for it. That's what she's gunning for. And I had this question of like, what makes a successful mommy blogger? And I feel like the real big ones, like they do have this aspirational lifestyle of like living in luxury and mommy blogging, but there is also a space, I know I've seen it, of creators who are unaspirational mommy bloggers who like, hey, cook with me like for my redneck family of 10 while we whatever, or you're seeing a very cleared home get like clean via like that speed thing.
Yeah, where they like speed up cleaning or whatever, which is what she was kind of doing in that video you showed me. It was like a sped up version of her cleaning the apartment.
Yeah, that is a definite like style of content creation. So yeah, there is a space, I guess, for non-aspirational mommy vloggers, but it's just interesting because she has been trying to go viral for a while, right?
Yeah.
So on the 6th of October, she posts this picture that says, "Help a girl out. My hubby said if we can flip our financial position, this doesn't have to be our last baby. And I'm really not ready to stop having babies yet." And then the caption of that video is, "I'm not ready to say goodbye to pregnancies, to end the chapter in my life where I grow life inside my body. I don't feel done. My soul longs for another son. We even had his name picked out. Hashtag mama five, happy mom. Hashtag I love my kids. Hashtag love being a mom. Hashtag best hubby." So that's one post. She has another post that says, "Y'all, my hubby said that if I can take," this is again from earlier this month, "if I can take our account viral and change our financial situation, he may hump away and give me as many babies as I want. So help a girl out. Share, follow, and help my account so I can make this man a father of seven." And then, so in September, she posted, "Y'all, there's only 92 days till Christmas. I had a goal to go viral before Christmas and maybe even make some extra funds to give my kids a Christmas. The countdown is so fast as a parent," which again raised some ethical questions. And, you know, she's been going, since this went initially viral, she's been going live for many, many, many hours a day. I think she went live for like 16 hours, like the other day. And she posted her Amazon wish list, and the Amazon wish list is pretty dark. Like, you know, there's, you know, kids' toys and educational things. And there's like kitchen supplies and toothbrushes. But also something that was dark for me is like, door security bar. So it's like a bar that you put over your door so that no one can break in. And like socks for her husband and like a really nice vacuum. So, you know, again, that is also causing controversy. And people are calling CPS on them, you know?
I mean, I'm definitely getting a major ick from all of this. Like, well, first of all, I hate the post that's like, "My husband can hump away and pump on in me if you guys give me money." I'm like, that, don't involve me in that. Like, I don't want to be involved in that. But like, it is tough because, yeah, you can want to be a mom influencer, but to put your hopes and dreams for, like, to put your actual needs to provide for your family up to the, like, kind of roulette that is the algorithm, especially if you're not already a very successful influencer. Like, it's one thing if you were, like, a lifestyle influencer and then you were a bridal influencer and now you're becoming a mom influencer and you're going to do the mom influencer thing and you already have, like, a basis to think that you would be able to support your family on your content going into it. But to have this many kids, which I do think that everyone has a right to like have as many kids as they want to have. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to get into that world of like, no, poor people should stop having whatever. Like, I don't want to live in that. But it's like, you need to have a plan to provide for those kids that isn't like, I become a famous mom influencer. Cause like, it's hard. You have a good hook, which is that you and your six kids live in one bedroom apartment. You're going to get views off that. But like, you know, I recently monetized my TikTok and like, you make money, but to make, I'm supporting a family of six money.
Yeah.
That's really, it just gives me a little bit of, it makes me a little afeared. But then I'm also like, I feel very against calling CPS on people where you don't know the abuse is happening. If you just think that like the way they live sucks and you don't like that, that's one thing. But it's like, I don't know. I just feel like CPS, I get a little nervous around Child Protective Services being called when it's like, do we know that removing this kid from their mother's arms is the best possible solution here?
Yeah. So you are, before I like share my opinion.
Yeah.
You just literally reflected what Bay Trinada at who's a Twitter user, Bay Trinada at Pinky underscore Balboa said, which she says, I think people are going a little too far calling CPS on that one bedroom family. There are some deficiencies for sure, but snatching those kids from their parents isn't the solution. But this is why trying to use your kids for social media prestige is a dangerous game. The mom is actually a decent cook. She could have centered her content around cooking for a big family and left the kids and living arrangements out of it. Now there's a spotlight on your family and it's not positive. And people are like, well, people are calling CPS because maybe they need connection to resources. Like, maybe it's not just, you know, getting out of the thing, but maybe they can go into government housing or whatever. But she says, I hear what y'all are saying about resources, but y'all know that's not the internet stranger's intentions. They could very well just send things the kids need. And that's also the thing, right? The Amazon wish list, there's kids stuff, whatever, but there is also like a ring light on there. And
yeah, no, we're definitely not going to be buying you a ring light.
But like, someone did buy it, you know, someone did buy it. So that's what's making people uncomfortable is that, you know, is being a content creator a viable career for anyone? And there's this one video she had where she was like she had her five kids, right? The toddler, the kid in the stroller and her three kids. And I think she was walking them to school. She ran ahead and she's pregnant, ran ahead, set the camera down and put it so she could like film her, like put it down and then went up and caught up with her family. So she could get that shot of her kids walking to school, like her walking with her kids to school. But she like posted it as like a LOL fail because all the kids look straight at the camera like they weren't supposed to, you know? And she's like, oh my God, my kids are so silly. But then it's just like, yeah, they're not like, you're trying to make them into family vloggers, which is like,
no,
that's really dangerous, really sticky territory when you start doing the family vlogging. And there is something about like, you know, I don't think TikTok will get banned in the U.S. I think it will be heavily regulated.
I was just thinking the other day, I was like, I wonder what the status of that is. I don't think it's going to get banned for real
it's
either.
It's not going to get banned. I think it was the U.S. government's failure by saying ban when it needs to say regulation. In the same way, Brazil was like, if you want to have Twitter in Brazil, you have to follow these Brazilian standards of like banning hate speech, whatever. And Elon Musk, ultimately, it was gone for like two or month. And then now it's back in Brazil.
Yeah.
I think the same thing is going to happen at TikTok where it's like, you know, I don't think the CEO of TikTok is a Chinese communist government official, but there is some weird, you know, weird things happening with who's monitoring and who benefits.
And where our data is stored. And
where our
goes.
Data is stored and all this stuff. So, yeah, we can't have a country, you know, there has to be that regulation. But to base whether your kids have what their needs met on this thing is, it's tough. It's really tough. So
it's fleeting. And like, you know, even in just our own lifetimes, we've seen social media platforms rise and fall because people were successful on Instagram doesn't mean they're successful on TikTok now. There was the rise and fall of Vine, which is probably a good search history at some point, where like people got really famous on Vine and were burned bright for a while and then it went away. And like they're not as famous on TikTok or they're a little famous on TikTok or whatever. So it's just like, and yeah, I mean, apps can get banned. They can go away. They can get like, you know, Twitter can get sold to Elon Musk. And now suddenly it's not, it doesn't have the like cachet that it used to have. People don't use it as much. So it's like, it is a dangerous game to try to become an influencer, especially to be like completely beholden to one platform. I'm sure she's like on YouTube and stuff too, but it does seem like this is mainly like TikTok.
It is mainly TikTok because she's going live on TikTok. She's doing all the things. I'm kind of feeling like, yeah, I could see if I was a mom and I want to be with my kids all day and I enjoyed being a mom, that like thinking that being a TikTok influencer is a viable career because maybe they've seen the success and other things. But like, you know, as we say all the time, like you have to diversify your profile. Like if she was making candles or a product and used her, like tried to go viral as a way to boost this product that she's making, like a candle business or whatever, then that could be, that's like a little easier to swallow. Or like, yeah, you're going to have this website, you're going to have this thing that you can always sell outside. You know, I think I see people, this girl makes like journals and this other person makes bread. Like there are people who make bread all week and then they go sell it in markets on weekends, but their content on TikTok is like, yeah, hey, come watch us do this. But if you're like, if it's just like, hey, look at my family. And I know it's in hopes that like she goes viral. And the thing is like, kind of her wish was to go viral before Christmas, and she is. And it's not clear if she's like happy that she's going viral in this way.
Yeah, well, the other thing is like, I do agree with what that other person said, that like, if she made content that was like, maybe we don't show the kids, but you're like, this is how I cook on a budget for my large family, or like,
she does that from time to time.
She used to do stuff like that, or even like, I would even find it interesting to be like, yeah, we live in a small space with the large family. Here's how we make it work. But I just don't think anytime it's like featuring the kids or the kids are needed for the content, I start to get the ick from that. And I do feel like she actually does have an interesting story to tell if she wanted to just focus on like the practical nature of like, this is what it's like to live the life the way that I live it. But this weird, like, pleading for being like, let us have more babies. I'm like, that's creeping me out.
Yeah, I think, like, she's throwing everything at the wall. She's doing the kid stuff. She's like, yeah, please, please, please make me go viral. She's showing the lifestyle. She's showing the clutter. She literally, like, a few weeks ago, I saw one of her TikToks that was like, hey guys, can you please let me know like why my content isn't viral yet and why isn't hitting yet? Like, even if it's mean, just tell me, because I really want to know, because I really want to go viral. And it's also just like, yeah, it's like, it's really hard. You don't make as much money. And also like, it's hard to fucking keep up. And it's dependent on this one thing, which is like, you know, we constantly talk about like people whose entire careers come from one singular thing, like get fucked.
Yeah. And also, again, like being an influencer is in a way like being part of the entertainment industry. And as we've seen, like you have it or you don't. Like some people just have that je ne sais quoi that people want to follow what they're doing. And some people can make basically the exact same content and it just doesn't have that je ne sais quoi again. Like it is kind of like being like, I want to be a famous actress, or like I want to be a singer. It's like, yeah, you can put stuff forward, you can make work, you can like learn the craft of influencing, which like there is a craft to it, to making videos and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, there is also just a quality of luck and spark, and do other people want to watch you?
I just also feel like that comes from doing it for a while and doing it consistently for a while and being patient, and then slowly but surely it will come. But so many people really just bank on, they're just going to be a content creator and then everything is going to go perfect.
Yeah, there's just like a little bit of delusion there. And also, I feel like also similar to the entertainment industry, if you seem so desperate for it, a lot of times that is going to work against you. So constantly being like, can you guys make this go viral? Please, I need to go viral so I can have another kid. Hey, why isn't my content going viral? Like that, I think, actually turns people off. Whereas when you think about people, like, I guess the ultimate momfluencer, obviously, of the day, I feel like, is Nara Smith, or like a ballerina farm or something. But like, if you think about Nara Smith, the energy she's giving off is like, this is all the most natural shit in the world. I just happen to be doing this. I just happen to be filming it. Even though obviously that's not true when you actually like think about how a single one of her videos is made. there's an effortless energy to what she's putting out. Like, you're not going to see Nora Smith going, hey guys, I just wanted to find out why my video didn't go viral. Like, that's not what's happening.
She could care less. Somebody, I saw somebody tweet like about Nora Smith. This bitch is always running out of stuff. Put the camera down and go to the store. She's like, today I ran out of gum. Today I ran out of this. Yeah, it just reminds me of that guy who did the SNL rap. Who was like, please hire me on SNL. And he just like went viral in a bad way. And it's like, man, if he just did the raps, you know, himself and like let it organically get to whoever it's supposed to get to, he probably could have had a better chance because SNL is directly hiring from TikTok and Instagram and stuff.
That was tough. That was a tough was one tough. When he went viral because I was like, this guy obviously is just a nerd. And yes, he's incredibly cringy, but I was like, I couldn't totally feel right making fun of him.
I was like, no, and honestly, for what SNL, like, I think he would have been fine on SNL. I think he would have actually done really well because he does those corny white people raps that fucking Andy Samberg and Lonely Island did for years. They would never have a black person rap on that fucking show. Like, I don't know. I mean, like to do the parody raps, they always get Andy. So I'm like, I don't know. I didn't see it like there wasn't a world where but it was because he was so thirsty and just did it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Again, there is a thing about all of this, like entertainment industry adjacent stuff, is there is just a level of like you have to kind of be cool. Like you have to be cool about it. And you have to like, you know, like obviously every single person who gets on SNL worked really hard and wanted to be on SNL and made a tape and all this stuff. But
and did a lot.
But something about like hopping on that mic in 4K and just being like, I want to be the next SNL cast member. Suddenly it's like the ick was too strong.
Yeah.
It was tough. It was a tough watch.
Well, watch that that very cramped space. it just reminded me of like a tenement. Like
that's like, what I was thinking too, is I was like, I feel like people, like, when I read, like, Angela's Ashes or whatever, which is, like, a book about, like, fucking, like, Irish immigrants, it's, like, that's how they lived. And I'm, like, but I guess, like, I guess they lived, but not well.
But they were extremely traumatized. You know, I think a big part of the conversation is from people who used to live like that.
Yeah.
And they're, like, I hated this. And I, like, vowed to, you know what I mean? So that was an also interesting perspective. But
yeah.
Watch that cramped space, you know?
I'm also like, when they get older, because you know, I was saying like adults have different privacy needs than kids, but it's like these kids are going to grow up and become teenagers and they're going to have privacy needs. So like.
Yeah, I would say like an 8 or 9 year old doesn't want to split a bed with their toddler.
No.
You know, and it happens or whatever, but I'm just like, damn, dude.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess like, you know, again, sharing rooms is one thing, but like having kids sleep in the kitchen, it's rough.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of disturbing content.
Incredible.
I did want to talk. We have a cursed content today.
I'm excited. It's been a minute since we've done a full cursed content.
Yeah. And this one is cursed. Today, we're going to talk about the Hello Kitty girl and UCF professor dating rumor controversy. Have you heard of this?
No, and all of those words, I can't even begin to imagine what they mean together.
Yeah, well, Travis Mead is a professor of computer science at the University of Central Florida, UCF, in Orlando, Florida. According to his public LinkedIn profile, he's been at UCF since 2015.
Okay.
Since then, multiple posts about Professor Mead have surfaced on the Reddit channel r/UCF subreddit regarding his classes and teaching style.
Okay.
On October 21st, 2024, Redditor Pink Destroyer posted to r/UCF subreddit asking, why was Professor Mead fired? Further clarifying, just curious if anyone knows the actual reason, because I've heard a few rumors and I want to know what happened. I really like the tea, LOL. And
agreed.
It received a lot of upvote before it got removed. But the next day, an anonymous imager user shared videos and photos allegedly showing UCF professor Travis Mead and his unnamed TA, supposedly named Kaylee, think about the craziest way that's spelled, who's seen in a girly outfit, including a short dress and a red bow. And in many of the photos, the man purported to be Mead is shown touching the TA, like holding her arm while walking and helping her dress. So, you know.
Yeah.
There's been photos of them like kind of being too close for comfort.
Canoodling a little bit.
Canoodling and all this stuff. Other photos shared in the imager post showed the Hello Kitty notes purportedly on Professor Mead's office door. In one image shown, the phrase "Happy Birthday, Daddy" and a name signed Kaylee can be seen. It's kind of like supposed to look like a little kid made it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've scrolled down in our doc. So it's like a little Hello Kitty coloring page kind of that's like on his door. Okay.
Yeah. And again, you know, the imager post showed screenshots of Discord messages alleged from the TA who said the professional. So that's one of the things was that like, so one of the rumors is that he got fired because he was having an inappropriate relationship with his teacher's assistant,
okay,
who's a student. Other people said, showed Discord messages allegedly from the teacher's assistant saying that the professor left because he had a great position lined up that needed him immediately and that Kaylee has a fiance. But other people in that Reddit originally were like, oh, him and that, like, specific, before the images came out, everyone's like, oh, he's always with that girl. It makes me uncomfortable. She's always around and she never even fucking helps, but she's his TA. Like,
yeah,
what the fuck? A few days later, a TikToker, Life of Brioni, posted a video that's been deleted in which she wrote, when everyone is shocked that a professor got fired, but his Hello Kitty TA was literally cuttering pictures of Hello Kitty and writing, happy 31st birthday, daddy, I love you. That would be publicly displayed on his office door. And then on Twitter, this is where it gets disturbing, right?
Yeah. So I mean, I'm disturbed already, but sure.
Somebody says, stop. Have you guys seen the tea happening down in UCF? Apparently, a professor was suddenly fired when students asked around about it. It turned out one of the TAs was openly in a DDLG relationship with him. Someone made a full album, an imager of evidence. I can't.
Wait, what is DDLG?
This is where it gets cursed, Elise.
Oh, no. Okay.
DDLG is acronym for Daddy Dom Little Girl. A sexual relationship where the dominant male is a daddy figure and a woman plays the role of a young girl. Oh. So that's why people are saying that with her clothing. That's what people are saying with the coloring book stuff.
Right, because for our listeners, the images of her, she always has like a big bow. She's dressed very youthfully in a youthful feminine attire. And then now she's putting these coloring pages on his door. That's really.
And the coloring pages, like to note, it's like misspelling. The letters are backwards. Like it's supposed to look like a little girl drew it.
Oh my God.
But other people are like, oh, it's an inside joke between them and a few people.
Oh, what's the joke? What's the joke? Is the joke that he's your daddy and you're a little girl? Here's my thing. Be into whatever you're into, like whatever. You're not the first TA who's fucking the professor she's TAing for, but leave it off the door of the office. Like, let's not be so obvious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Like, I think the conversation and the fact that I had to learn what DDLG meant.
Yeah, no, that's cursed.
Is cursed. But yeah, what did you guys think was going to happen? And it's again, like, even though they're consensual adults, you're not supposed to be fucking your employees if you work. If you're a teacher or a professor is not supposed to be fucking his employees. So
yeah,
that is the implication, his teaching assistant.
And if you are going to engage in that, if you're going to take that risk, whatever, keep it cute. Be keep private. It cute. It's actually very, you know, again, there's a long and storied history of TAs and the professors they TA for fucking each other.
Yeah.
And I think one of the keys to that is you make excuses that seem normal for why you would be together. And then when you're out in public, you act as though you are professor and his teaching assistant. The fucking coloring pages on the door is like, yeah, what did you expect? Why would your teaching assistant be giving you coloring pages? Why do you have coloring pages on your door as a professor? This is a university.
Of computer science.
Yeah, like I would, like, I guess if my professor had his own child's drawings on the door, I would kind of be like, oh, that's cute. But also, again, like, you're a professor of computer science. Like, why are these even here? Like, why aren't they in your office?
It's fucking like, creepy. It's fucking creepy. Well,
speaking of fucking creepy people.
Speaking of fucking creepy, we got a political TikTok
for you.
So Trump had a rally at Madison Square Garden in New York City on Sunday afternoon slash night.
I wasn't in the city. Did you notice a vibe shift? Could you tell that his people had descended upon Madison Square Garden?
You know, I stayed nestled in my beautiful home in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I did laundry. I was so far away.
I protected myself.
And the whole thing is that, you know, if you go to the city, especially that area on weekends, it's all, quote, bridge and tunnel people. It's all people from Long Island, Staten Island, New Jersey. That's why it's noted that it's Sunday afternoon and night, because they couldn't do that on a weeknight because no one could be able to drive in. Anyway, Trump hosted a rally in Madison Square Garden on Sunday. This was supposed to be like a campaign event that, you know, he was supposed to deliver his closing message. There are guest appearances like Hulk Hogan, Dr. Phil, and Vinny from the Jersey Shore.
Wow, disappointing, because Vinny was the one who got into improv.
I thought we saved him. And Vinny's the one who, like, Vinny and Polly, but Vinny has said on record that he's, like, obsessed with Black women. And he's like, finds a lot of Black women very sexy and interesting. And a lot of Black women have been coming out and saying, like, this guy will go and like every single one of my posts on Instagram immediately. He will DM me all the time. And now he's like talking about Trump. Like, he's a fucking loser.
He loves Black women until it's time to vote for one.
As someone who's been on dating apps in New York City, it checks out.
Yeah, no, it's not
Italian
surprising.
Italian from Staten Island, the event turned into an ugly racist rally where speakers insulted Puerto Ricans, Blacks, and Jews. Like, what year is this?
No. It was crazy, actually, watching the clips from it. I was like, oh, wow. Like, this is actually just legitimately like a hate event.
Exactly. So speakers of the night called Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris the devil and said that the woman vying to become the first woman and Black woman president had begun her career as a prostitute. These are quotes. Some Democrats are arguing that Trump is a fascist and have compared his event to a pro-Nazi rally at MSG that happened in February 1939.
Ooh.
So people were like, this is just like that rally that they had in 1939. Trump denounced the four criminal indictments brought against him, and he ramped up his denunciations in the recent weeks. And he keeps saying enemies of from within, naming domestic political rivals, and suggested he would use the military to go after them, which is fascist behavior.
It's textbook. Fascism. I mean, it's just like he always pushes the envelope to a new thing that you're not supposed to say, that you're not supposed to do. And it doesn't matter because his people just fall in line and they're like, he doesn't really mean it. That's not what he really means. And it's like, okay, you're really willing to like stake your vote on that, that he's bluffing or that he doesn't know what he's talking about. And also you want to vote for someone who doesn't know what they're talking about and uses all this type of language, but doesn't mean it. Like, it's strange.
It's really strange. One of the biggest moments from the night was when Austin comedian and Joe Rogan prodigy Tony Hinchcliffe said a shitty joke about Puerto Rico. Let's watch.
It is absolutely wild times. It really, really is. And, you know, there's a lot going on. Like, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah. I think it's called Puerto Rico. okay, all right, okay, we're getting there. No,
it's weird because I like can't even perceive how well the joke did in the room. It's obviously horrifying and a completely fucked up thing to say, but like, did he not get the response he wanted?
I don't think he did. And the crazy thing is, according to NBC News, it wasn't the first time Hinchcliffe has used the Puerto Rican line, because he practiced that same line the night before at the Stand Comedy Club in New York City.
Wow.
The joke didn't get any laughs that night and got just a handful of awkward chuckles. The Trump campaign was asked Monday on Noticias Telemundo whether it was aware of Hinchcliffe's jokes in advance. Bianca Rodriguez, the deputy director of Hispanic communications for the RNC and the Trump campaign, said they don't have absolute control over what the speakers say, but Hinchcliffe was reading from a teleprompter. He allegedly was going to call Kamala a C-U-N-T.
Awesome.
And they made him take it out because okay. They said that was too much. So I don't really buy the whatever. And then on Monday, Trump's campaign Trump's campaign said that the joke doesn't reflect the views of President Trump or the campaign.
It couldn't reflect them more. That's all. Like, it's like, it's so reflective of his campaign. It's crazy. It's, they hired him to say shit like this. That's what he does.
AOC and Tim Walz were on a stream playing video games on Twitch.
Awesome.
They reacted to the clip live, and Tony Hinchcliffe replied, and this was, I think, his only post about the incident. He said, "These people have no sense of humor. Wild that a vice presidential candidate would take time out of his, quote, busy schedule to analyze a joke taken out of context to make it seem racist. I love Puerto Rico and vacation there. I made fun of everyone. Watch the whole set. I'm a comedian, Tim. Might be time to change your tampon."
Oh, this is the shit that bothers me so much, is when you make, your whole thing is to make jokes that are controversial to offend people. And then you're like, I can't believe everyone got offended. Like, people have no sense of humor. It's like, no, you made a joke that was designed to offend people and they got offended. And then it's like this framing of, wow, I can't believe that the vice president took time out of his busy day to attack my set. It's like a set that you made while supporting his opponent, a set that you made while attacking the campaign that he's on. It's not like he went on YouTube and watched a bunch of Tony Hinchcliffe videos and just said, wow, I don't think this guy is very funny. You were at a Trump rally. He's going to comment on what you're saying at the Trump rally.
He would comment on anything. And it's also like, it's a political rally.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like a comedy. I don't know if it was supposed to be a comedy set. It's like when Mindy Kaling does a thing, it's like, it's going to be funny and have jokes, but it's at a political rally.
Yeah.
So, and again, a lot of Puerto Rican people were pissed.
Of course.
But they're a huge, large voting demographic in a lot of swing states. They're the second largest group of Latino eligible voters after Mexican Americans in this country. Also, Puerto Rico is a part of the U.S., so all of them are citizens.
Yep.
It would behoove them. Not only was this at a political rally, but it's also like, this is a huge voting block that they've been trying to get for a long time.
And they've like made inroads with Latino men in a lot of different. Republicans have made inroads with Latino men in a lot of different areas. It's not really like specific to Puerto Ricans necessarily, but like, there are probably a decent amount of like older Puerto Rican guys who are on the fence about Kamala and Donald Trump, and hearing their home called an island of trash is probably not going to sway them in Trump's direction.
And I just feel like this was such beautiful timing, because ironically, Kamala had just released a video talking about her plan for Puerto Rico. She had her criticism of Trump handling of the hurricane. She talked about how she wants to help the electric grid, which is a big deal, work with private business and the public sector to give Puerto Rico a better economy. So she just released this very specific policy thing. And then that comment came out. Because of that, Bad Bunny reposted that video to his 45 million followers on Instagram. And so did Mark Anthony, Jennifer Lopez, Ricky Martin, Lin-Manuel, Despacito singer Luis Fonsi. Mm-hmm. what the fucked up thing about it is that we're talking, they're saying it doesn't reflect us. It doesn't reflect us. During Trump's presidency, Congress approved $20 billion in federal housing funds for Puerto Rico for post-hurricane reconstruction, a historic amount, and the Trump administration blocked it and obstructed a government probe looking into why they blocked it. So it isn't just this one thing that this stupid comedian who has a long, long, long history of saying racist things, Tony Hinchcliffe. He has this stupid like YouTube thing called Kill Tony, where people go on like open mics and he criticizes like open micers. It's like pretty that's fucked weird. Up. But that's like, it's a super popular viral fucking thing that a lot of like open micers will like sleep in their cars to be able to get the chance to get on Kill Tone.
Would
like,
never be crazy. Me. Would never
be me. To get in an open mic to have some like unfunny loser say that you're not funny.
Yeah, and be like, hey, you're not racist enough. Like, absolutely yeah. fucking not. I keep seeing these things that are like, did Tony Hinchcliffe just lose the election for Trump and da da da? And it's like, obviously, whoever wins or loses, it's going to be like so many factors that go into it. But considering that this is an election that's going to be decided by just like a handful of a couple thousand people across a couple states, it is little stuff like this. Not that being insanely racist is little, but it is like these small
the
chips.
The timing of the racism.
Yeah, like these small chips away at different things that could create the coalition that puts one candidate versus the other over the edge. Is Bad Bunny gonna like revolutionize the race? No, but would Bad Bunny maybe posting get some people who are gonna stay home to actually vote? Maybe. Is Bad Bunny posting gonna put this information in front of some people who maybe wouldn't have seen it and are now gonna vote for Kamala Harris or again not stay home? They would have stayed home, check their voter registration if they maybe wouldn't have checked it. It's all these little things that are going to add up when things are as close as they are because the race is insanely close, which is also crazy, but it is what we're dealing with.
Yeah, so that's Polititiktok.
Oh, Polititiktok. You know, we just talked about a lot of assholes. Mm-hmm. I think it's time now to talk about some grassholes. What would you say?
I say let's go.
So we're actually going to start off with some grasshole check-ins this week. There are a couple updates. Number one, for any of you guys who ever watched or listened to our free pilot episode that we created, which you can see on our Patreon at any time, our first ever grasshole of the week was Club Chalamet. This is a 54-year-old woman who runs a Timothy Chalamet stan account. Again, if you want all of the background, you can go back. That episode is for free on our Patreon. But I did want to check in on Club Chalamet because, number one, I feel like since declaring her a grasshole, I've observed her for much longer. And I actually think that she's more at peace than any of us have imagined. Like, I think that she's actually completely at peace with her online use. She's just a woman in her 50s who loves Timothy Chalamet. And I actually think she should keep posting and doing exactly as she pleases.
It is a little unsettling to me that she's a Black woman.
It does. It certainly adds to the overall what of the vibe of it, where it's just like,
exactly.
Like, if you saw the Club Chalamet account, you would obviously think it was being run by like a 14-year-old white, maybe Asian American young woman, or maybe a gay, like a little twink, right?
Absolutely.
To find out that it's that it's like a 55-year-old Black woman is jarring. It is. It's not what you would expect, but.
Who almost worked at the World Trade Center?
Yes, who almost worked at the World Trade Center, which we address because that's how people found out her age. But I've been watching her for a long time and I really actually think that she's in complete peace and she, you know, she just simply, she has a pure love of Timothy Chalamet and I actually think that she should never stop posting. But I did want to highlight a post that she put up this week because I really loved it so much. So some of you may know that there was a Timothy Chalamet lookalike contest in New York this week. In Washington Square Park, but then they got kicked out of Washington Square Park, which did result in some of the Timothy Chalamet lookalikes getting arrested. So main prize was $50, which was presented as a large check. And Timothy Chalamet did show up. So this is like the key thing to know is that Timothy Chalamet went. Club Chalamet had previously predicted that Timothée Chalamet was not going to show up. So she had initially said, a few people have asked me if I'm sure Timothée won't attend that lookalike event in New York City on Sunday. I'm not part of his management team, but I highly doubt that he'll attend. He's busy filming, and I really think for security, that's the last place he needs to be at. But he could look at it from the safety and security of his room, LOL. So that was her initial take. Now, once Timothée did show up, as often happens with Timothée-related news, the internet immediately starts checking in on Club Chalamet. What is she saying? What is she doing? So I think some people were coming into the comments being like, you are wrong, Club Chalamet. So then Club Chalamet tweeted this. I know many of you think you caught me in a gotcha moment from this tweet below after Timmy made a cool surprise appearance at the lookalike contest yesterday. It's not that deep. I know. It's not that deep, folks. I'm thrilled he was there because it benefited a charity fundraiser that was started by @WhistleBreath. And the joy that it brought many of the fans who got to see him makes me happy as well. Look at the PR that he got from it and the headlines that have returned the focus on him and demonstrated how much he loves and respects his fans. He was only there for a brief moment, and that speaks so highly of him and put the spotlight on a lot of cool fans who have the luck of kind of looking like him. So it's all good. I'm not Buddha. And again, I'm not part of his management team. I don't claim to know everything. And in fact, I love being surprised too. Just like how I was surprised that A Complete Unknown is being released this year and not in 2025, as first believed. And again, this benefits me in ways you can't imagine. There are more exciting moments coming up over the next several months, so keep watching Club Chalamet for some exclusives. That is, if you care what I have to say. Wink.
I mean, there's a powerful presence there that, like, it is interesting to have this sub-character of Timothée Chalamet's life.
Like, it's just so funny because she is so self-assured in all of her communications regarding Timothée, but she does also get caught up in drama. Like, I was reading older posts of hers, and sometimes you don't even know what she's telling, what she's really talking about. She's like, I'm not going to be distracted. I'm focused 100% on Timothée and his award-winning turn in A Complete Unknown. Other people may be going through the rumor mill, but not me. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I mean, she keeps her eye on the prize. I feel like there's a lot we can learn from her as two women with ADHD.
Exactly.
She keeps it concentrated. She keeps it focused. She doesn't get distracted easily. Me, who just picked up a lighter to...
Like, that's why I'm like, I think I actually fully support her internet use. I think that she's using the internet exactly how she wants to. And I think that she, you know, she just loves Timothée Chalamet and her eyes are on the prize.
I don't know if I fully support her.
I understand.
It's like the resilient Jenkins. I'm like, I support your right to do this. I don't know if I would necessarily make these same choices.
True.
I don't know if this is how I would use my time. I don't know if I would do it in this way, but, you know.
It's a free country for at least another
week.
At least another week, you're allowed to be an older woman who loves Timothée Chalamet on Twitter.
And post about it. I'm going to go see... Not like your, unlike your Eras Tour in Poland, I'm going to go see Tinashe in Brooklyn. And it's the day before the election. And I'm just like, wow, we better enjoy it while we can. And my friend said, one more night to get nasty.
Whose freak will America match? That's the true question.
Well, I do think that Club Chalamet kind of looks like a version of Kamala.
And she, I did look and she already voted and she voted for Kamala. And she said, make your voice heard from the Club Chalamet.
Go off, Club Chalamet.
So Club Chalamet also uses her platform to speak on the issues. A second grasshole adjacent person that there's an update on. Obviously, last week we talked about the Cynthia Erivo Instagram story. She wasn't grasshole. She was discourse, but we all agreed that it was grasshole behavior. We do have an update. On the red carpet for the 2024 CFDA Fashion Awards, Erivo was asked about the poster situation, and she did say, "I'm passionate about it, and I know the fans are passionate about it, and I think for me it was just like a human moment of wanting to protect little Elphaba, and it was like a human moment. I probably should have called my friends, but it's fine." So it seems like she's having some grasshopper regret.
I'm sure her friends are like, "Girl, get a grip." I love the alternate tagline is "Go call your friends."
Go touch friends. You should have called your friends. Probably should have called your friends, which I do think, as we talk about our subsects of grasshole, there are grassholes where it's like, you should have just called your friends. Like, you should have just called Ariana and vented that you don't like the poster. And Ariana would have been like, "Yeah, no, totally, Cynthia, you're my sister."
Yeah, it's like, "Oh, yeah, like, this is annoying, but people do this."
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a normal thing people do. And, like, you're just going to ignore it because, like, no one cares. And I say that as someone who's gotten fan art about me that I didn't like. And, you know, you just say, like, "Oh, my God, thank you." And then you text your friends and you're like, "Do I look like this? Do I have beaver teeth? Talk about it.
Does this erase me? Does this image, is this image the most offensive thing you've ever seen?" And then your friend goes, "I mean, like, you have a right to feel how you feel, girl. I don't know.
But you are a Black lesbian, so probably not."
Yeah, like, "I can't speak for you, but, like, you have, like, you do you, and you have such a right to feel how you feel. Maybe I would feel differently." And then you're like, "Okay, my friend doesn't agree with me, and she's just being nice." And then you keep it to yourself. So those are our grasshole updates. But this week's grassholes are a group of people. These are a group of people that have existed in my FYP for a long time. I know they've existed in your FYP, Millie. And then they just came up in my personal life in an interesting way. And I decided it's time to highlight them on the podcast. The grassholes of this week and the grassholes of every week that they're active are people online who insist that they are sovereign citizens. Millie, what do you know about sovereign citizens?
I know that they've, like, taken over homes and stuff, and, like, also, I don't engage too. They've popped up, but it's not something that I really engage deeply with.
Like, okay.
I'm aware of it, but not too much.
I engage deeply with sovereign citizen TikTok. So, basically, the way a sovereign citizen TikTok will come into your FYP is that what you will see is a person and a judge arguing. You'll quickly realize that this is someone who's representing themselves. And that this is someone who is insane. And usually it'll be a judge being like, ma'am, you're arrested. Ma'am. Like, that's the general way that these videos go. But basically, what sovereign citizens are, this is from Wikipedia. The sovereign citizen movement, also the SovSit movement or SovSits, is a loose group of anti-government activists, litigants, tax protesters, financial scammers, and conspiracy theorists. So that's a great mix. Based mainly in the United States, they have their own pseudo-legal belief system based on misinterpretations of common law and claim not to be subject to any government statutes unless they consent to them. So basically, like, they're people who have absorbed this weird fake legal gobbledygook that they think that they can go to court and say, like, by the article of Section 2 of Constitution-A, I declare that you have no jurisdiction over me, and I am a flesh and blood sovereign citizen. Like, they'll say these weird prepared statements that they think unlock some kind of key to you no longer being subject to laws of any nation.
It's like the copy pasta of the Instagram statement.
Yes,
of, you do not have AI does not have
the right to mind me.
But it's like by nature of you being on Instagram, just like by nature of you being in the United States, you're already bought in, baby.
Yeah, like you're subject to U.S. law, unfortunately. Do we agree with all those laws? Certainly not. But it is this, like, it basically it's this thing where, like, these people will get in trouble. They'll break the law. A lot of them, a big subsect of it is that they drive without a license. And then they'll say, like, I'm not driving, I'm traveling. And they think that that makes a difference. Sometimes they'll have a fake license. I know. They'll be like, I'm not driving, I'm traveling. And then they have like, some of them will have like a fake license that they made. And they'll be like, this should do, officer. And then the officer's like, I don't know what this is.
Like, yeah, a group of people who are incredibly kind, generous, and patient. Police officers pulling you over.
Exactly. So yeah, they have their own pseudo legal belief system, and they basically think that by making these weird statements, they can subvert and get around U.S. law and like be acquitted of any crime. So they believe that courts have no jurisdiction over people that use certain procedures. So writing these weird specific phrases. Yeah, like you can, if you get a bill and you write on the bill, like, I do not consent to this bill, and you send it back, they think that that is like a legally sound way to not pay your bills, which, like, I wish.
I mean, yeah.
Like, God bless. I wish we lived in this world. But they said, like, okay, and that there are loopholes that make a person immune to government laws and regulation. They also regard most forms of taxation as illegitimate. They reject social security numbers, driver's licenses, and vehicle registration. So if they get pulled over, they'll be like, I am not driving. I am traveling. I am a sovereign citizen. I am traveling within my bodily autonomy. And then they'll hand their police officer like fake documents that they made. The movement may appeal to people facing financial or legal difficulties, wishing to resist perceived government oppression, and as a result, it has grown significantly during times of economic and social crisis. So, popped up super hard online in the pandemic, obviously. I think that, like, the anti-vax movement really fed into it because they were like, if the government tries to jab you, you just tell them, I am a flesh and blood human man, and I do not consent to be jabbed. I don't know. The world view of it is so funny to me that, like, these government systems are so all-powerful, and everything is a big matrix that we're in, and there are these nefarious figures at the top who are controlling everything. But if you just say, like, these magic words, they must release you from prison?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense.
Like, everyone, I mean, but it doesn't make sense to a logical person, but I can see how it makes sense to someone who thinks that, like, everyone else is an idiot, but they're like so ahead of the game.
It's those types of people, and I've met some of them in my life. I'm currently in Austin, Texas, which I think is a nexus of many of these types, though I do love Austin. It's one of my favorite cities in the US, but it's people who think that they are so smart that it actually makes them one of the dumbest people in the world. And so they're going to go into a court and be like, you have no jurisdiction over me, for I am man. And then a judge is going to be like, okay, so I'm fining you hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. I'm also surprised that you used women in an example, because I feel like it's overwhelmingly men that do this shit.
That's, you would think that, but it's actually been growing among women. The movement has been growing among women. And then there are two kind of subsects of sovereign citizens. And the way that the ADL describes this is very funny, because what they actually are just trying to say is, like, white sovereign citizens versus black sovereign citizens, who talk about this stuff a little bit differently. But they say traditional versus Moorish. I don't know. Anyway, black sovereign citizens, usually, like, they are doing a combination of, like, the standard sovereign citizen beliefs plus additional concepts derived from the Moorish Science Temple, which is a religious sect, and, like, other black fringe groups. So I think we might be getting into some Hotep territory, perhaps.
Absolutely. And also, like, I do understand, like, not saying that this is right or whatever, but for a lot of loopholes, there are a lot of loopholes that happen when it's associated with religion.
Yeah.
So when you put a religion on it, then you can get into not being taxed, not this, not that. I have a friend who is a firefighter, and he told me that, like, if they'll find someone who does, who's doing a bonfire. But if they say that they're doing it for religious reasons, they will let them do it.
Yeah.
But there's no way to prove if it's actually religious or not. So it's just like, it's just one of those things where it's like.
Yeah. And it's also, it is like, I do understand why like Black people would be like, the system works in these fucked up ways. I mean, you see like white people use loopholes to get out of legal issues, but the loophole is just that they have like fucking money. It's not like that you're going to say this like phrase that unlocks everything. So it's like this magical thinking version of it. Whereas like the white sovereign citizens are all just like, nobody can tell me what to do in the United States of America. And I live on my land and I have free speech and I can have whatever I want. Like, it's that type of thinking, I think. But either way, it does make for a multicultural and multigendered movement. The movement I read specifically has been growing among young women. And as I was watching different sovereign citizen videos to prepare, I would say, like, I truly saw videos of every single type of person engaging in this shit. Like, white woman Karen sovereign citizens. There was one video of a Black woman being pulled over where she had the little fake driver's license, which I really liked because the cop was like, literally, what is this? And it didn't even look like a regular driver's license. Like, it was vertical. I was like, what?
Oh, my God.
And oh my God. Yeah, there's a lot of like Black and white men.
I feel like this is cursed.
Oh, it's absolutely cursed content. So sovereign citizens, they engage in a large amount of criminal activity. This includes harassment and retaliation tactics known as paper terrorism, scams and frauds, sometimes large in scope, and violence. They've engaged in like shootouts and stuff. Like, that's usually, I think, probably more the like traditional sovereign citizens where they'll like post up on like,
cool.
Yeah, on like somebody's land and be like, nobody can come. It's like that Waco energy of like,
yeah,
of like right wing people being like, I'm going to be in a standoff with the FBI, like, because I'm a sovereign citizen and I'm not subject to the laws, like just fucking weird stuff. In recent years, they've been able to grow their movement by appealing to anti-vaxxers, QAnon, MAGA supporters. So exactly who you would think. And then they've also spread extensively through prisons and jails, which is super interesting. I mean, it makes sense. Like, you have all these people who are like, how can I get out of here? How can I, like learn about the law? And then you get these grifters who are like, actually, if you declare yourself, like, a flesh and blood human man who's sovereign, then, like, they have to release you.
It's another thing that's taking advantage of vulnerable people.
The big things about them is like they are pseudo legal in nature. So this is this was also from the ADL. It says, though to a layperson, they often seem to have the form and appearance of legitimate legal documents. To judges, attorneys, and others versed in the law, sovereign citizens' claims and theories are typically little more than meaningless nonsense. It is common for judges to characterize sovereign citizen documents or filings using terms such as gibberish or gobbledygook. The other big characteristic is they often use magical thinking. People who engage in magical thinking believe that specific words, rituals, or actions can affect events in the physical world, like the way a wizard might assemble ingredients and incantations for a spell. Sovereign citizens might string together legal terms and phrases, quotations from court cases, and other language and symbology in ways that they think will allow them to become immune from laws and regulation, free of debts and obligations, or enabled to create their own money, courts, or even law enforcement agencies. If they fail, they are told that it is just because they didn't use the correct phrase or file the correct document.
This reminds me of like how some restaurants have like a secret menu.
Yes.
Like In-N-Out has a secret menu that you can ask for, but you have to know. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's like, is it really a secret? I don't know. So they're trying to secret menu the law.
They are trying to secret menu the law. That's exactly it. So there was like an initial boom in sovereign citizens from the early to mid 80s. It boomed again in the mid to late 90s as part of the far right movement. So like the Oklahoma City bombing, like Ruby Ridge, a lot of these things have sovereign citizen energy. And then now they've started another period of growth since the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's when sovereign citizens started to be able to use social media to like build audiences and get ideas. Cause that's another thing, is there are all these like gurus in the sovereign citizen movement. The gurus are all old white guys, and they're all, for the most part, in prison.
I like literally had a full body chill when you said that they're a guru.
So to round things out, I did want to watch just one classic sovereign citizen video. I watched a bunch of these. A lot of them are long, but I wanted to watch one that I think is just emblematic of how like all of these videos go down.
This is so crazy.
It's, this stuff is so wild. It's like genuinely ridiculous.
Hello, how's it going? I'll be better. All right. So my understanding, you want to represent yourself? All right. You're more than welcome to represent yourself, but here's the thing.
So I wanted to stop here. Millie, can you describe the two people that we are seeing in this video?
We have a judge, really nice black lady judge, and then a guy who looks like he could maybe be Native American. And he's wearing a lot of necklaces and is in court.
Yes, he has a long braid. He's certainly trying to evoke a Native American aesthetic, I would say.
Yeah. Everybody says that they can be an attorney because all attorneys do is talk. That's what people think. But they don't realize there's a lot of knowledge, experience, and wisdom behind that.
Absolutely.
So if you want to have a jury trial where you represent yourself, you're more than welcome to do so. But once it's set for trial, it's going to trial, and no one's going to be helping you. The state is not going to say, hey, we see that you really don't know the rules, so let me tell you this rule. They're not going to be doing that. My job is not going to be to help you with objections, help you with motions. That's 100% you. Do you understand?
I do. And so are we on the record?
No, we're not on the record. But you want to put something on the record?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Sure. All right. Court is calling 2024 CR2974, State of Texas versus Hector Casanova. Can I have parties announced for the record for the state? And are you Hector Casanova?
No. For the record, I am the flesh and breathing man. I'm here on a special appearance to clarify any misunderstanding. I am not the legal fiction known as Hector J. Casanova that is on the information there. I just have a few questions to clarify some things.
All right. So if you would like to clarify some things, then the person I need to speak to is the flesh and blood man known as Hector Casanova.
Okay. We'll stop it there. So, Millie, how did watching Hector Casanova, the flesh and blood man that is Hector Casanova, make you feel?
It just feels like he thinks he sounds smart. He's just one of those dumb people who think they sound smart, but they sound like fucking idiots.
When she just is like, are you Hector Casanova? And he's like, no, I am the flesh and blood man, but not the legal fiction known as Hector Casanova. It's like, oh, no. And the way this judge is so patiently just being like, okay, so you can represent yourself, but just know that, like, it's not going to go right. Attorneys do more than just talking, and I'm not going to help you when you don't know what to do here or how to do anything. I also love when she's like, okay, well, if you have questions, then I'm going to need to speak to the flesh and blood man known as Hector Casanova. Is that you?
It's really rough. It's so rough. I don't know.
And so for the crime of believing online conspiracy theorists who tell you that you can become a sovereign citizen and use legal gobbledygook to get out of being held responsible for any crime, we must tell sovereign citizens, go touch grass. I wanted to talk about sovereign citizens on the pod for a while, and I was like, you know what? This is the week. I'm in Austin. I'm in the land of sovereign citizens.
Well, I'm glad you waited because I'm disgusted.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to the pod. As a reminder, you can find us everywhere at Go Touch Grass Pod, and you can find me on TikTok at Elise Navidad and Instagram at Pandalise.
And you can find me at Millie_Tamarez on Instagram and TikTok, and at Millie Tamarez on Twitter.
Yeah. And guys, go get out the vote wherever you're listening. Yeah. Go vote.
Yeah. I'll be working the polls. I'll be there 5 a.m. to 9 p.m.
I know. The episode after this comes out the day after the election. I wonder if we'll know who the president is. And then very next episode of this podcast. We won't know when we recorded it, but when this episode is released, the next time you see a new Go Touch Grass Pod in your feed, we may know who won. And we may be happy or we may be very upset.
Well, fuck. Anyway, till then.
Go Touch Grass!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.